This is a health and wellness radio show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Whole Scoop. This is a health and wellness radio show. Our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. The goal of the program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for them. The show will air every second and fourth Thursday, so our next show will be January 20th at 7 p.m. I am your host, Carol Ferraci. I am a registered esthetician who has practiced for over 30 years. I am the founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it's important to me bring you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. This is our inaugural show. So that being said, we may have some kinks tonight, and we will eventually work them all out. Tonight's show is diet and weight loss, which one is right for you. The goal of this show is to provide realistic avenues for success. The call-in number is 347-85-8894. And we're also taking questions at info.thewholescoop@gmail.com. Tonight, our guests, I'm so excited to have these guests. I'm so excited to have Susan Greenberg-Weiner. Susan is a registered dietitian who is the owner of Susan Nutrition in New York. She is the 2015 AADE Diabetes Leader of the Year and the recipient of the 2014 Distinguished Alumni Award from the State University of New York. She was voted one of the top 10 diabetes nutrition education bloggers by iVillage.com, and she has a new book, The Complete Diabetes Organizer, Your Guide to Less Stressful and More Manageable Diabetes of Life. It's a how-to guide on diabetes organization. She's a well-respected lecturer for organizations such as the American College of Sports Medicine and was the official sports nutritionist for the American Diabetes Association Walk America program. She's an adjunct professor at Queens College and taught the Applied Personal Training Education at Hofstra University, and she earned her master's degree in Applied Physiology and Nutrition. She's also a certified adult weight management person. You can find Susan at www.susanweinernutrition.com. I'm absolutely so excited to have her. Thank you, Susan, for being here. How are you tonight?
I'm so well. Thank you so much for having me, Carol. I am thrilled to be with you this evening.
Well, we're so thrilled to have you. We're also so thrilled to have Sean Johnson with us, who's a mental health counselor with White Picket Fence Counseling in Winter Park, Florida. White Picket Fence Foundation provides help people overcome obesity, overeating, and other eating disorders in order to maintain a healthy mind, body, and lifestyle. They focus on mental health and behavioral counseling to individuals who are obese, overweight, or with eating disorders and their families, regardless of financial barriers. They do quality training and resources to mental health professionals and graduate students in the mental health field. They specialize in the collaboration with dietitians, medical professionals, hospitals, and residential treatment centers. Sean received her master's degree in mental health counseling from Nova Southeastern University. Her experiences with the psychology of eating, including food addiction, emotional overeating, compulsive eating, and self-esteem body image. She has counseled adolescents to the middle age. Her focus is assisting the individuals in order to obtain success with weight management, and her passion is to assist people with achieving his or her goal via individual techniques which best fit that lifestyle. You can find Sean at www.whitepicketfencecounselingcenter.com. Remember, our call-in number is 347-855-8894. Hello, Sean. How are you? Sean? Let's try that again. Sean, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hi, Sean, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Do we have Susan?
I'm still here, yes.
Good, good. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm so excited about this show. I know that we have so many things to talk about, but I kind of want to just start out in discussion, a little dialogue, because you know what? This particular topic, I think everybody and their brother can relate to. I don't know anybody who doesn't or have some issue with either the way they look or the amount of weight that they carry or how they're eating or what's going on. I think we have a culture that mandates that we are attentive and sometimes too attentive. I know for myself, I'm watching people in grocery stores read labels, and I'm not sure if they even know what they're seeing or what they're reading. And at this, you know, it can be exceptionally confusing. And so I think that what we need to look at tonight is what makes it successful, what makes weight loss successful, because we are inundated with this program versus that program. Is there a right program? Is there a right way of doing something, or is the right way about the person? And Susan, let's start with you.
Well, it's such a huge topic, isn't it? And something that so many Americans, being overweight or being obese or even having chronic diseases such as diabetes, know that they should be losing weight, but it's a very hard road to tackle. Everybody's very different. So we all have different genetic makeups. We come from different ethnic backgrounds and have different food preferences. So a lot does go into it. And I also want to say up front that it's not always the real issue, I don't think, is necessarily losing weight. Losing weight is not that difficult. In the long run, keeping weight off is what is very, very challenging. When I've been in practice for over 25 years, and when people come into my practice, they'll say, yeah, I was very successful on this program or very successful on that program. And, you know, we talk about it and it's not about judgment, but I will say, well, success is really measured on how you keep the weight off, not in the process of losing it. So we work on practice makes progress, not practice makes perfect, when it comes to weight loss, and it's more of a road and a journey. So I just wanted to open up with that comment.
Thank you so much. I love that. I love practice makes progress.
Practice
Sean, what do you think
progress.
About that?
I definitely agree with that concept. You know, coming from, and to piggyback on that, everybody comes from a different environment, whether how they were raised or culturally, and on top of that, you know, all of the factors that come with having to adapt to a new change of lifestyle and what works for them. And, you know, beyond just the food, how they emotionally approach it, you know, their thinking on it, their mood, you know, what is going on beneath just the ability to change your lifestyle. It's, you know, deeper inner thoughts of interpersonal psychological factors that come into play and how it's also relative to achieving that.
I can't disagree with any of that. I think that, you know, do you agree that the psychological factors we're surrounded by those psychological factors? I mean, you know, for me, when people, they'll talk about calories. Well, there's too many calories in that. And do we really, ladies, do we have a barometer for calories? Do we really know how many or too many? I mean, we kind of can figure out that if we're eating a Big Mac, then, you know, we're kind of overloaded with calories. But if we're standing in the grocery store and looking at a product on the shelf and trying to decide whether to buy that, how is it, you know, what do you ladies tell people? And how, because, you know, the people are looking at it and they're going, that's good for you, that's bad for you, oh no. And for every person that says it's good for you, there are 10 others that say it's bad for you. And how do you help your clients decipher that?
Well, I'll tackle that first if that's okay. I think that we don't really understand what a calorie is, just starting with that. As of December of 2015, then the restaurants federally, all restaurants that have chains of 20 or more, for example, like a McDonald's or even an Applebee's or an Olive Garden, are going to have to, it's going to be mandated to post calories. So the calorie information across the country is going to be posted, and nutritional information you can get by request. And even looking at that, and the initial studies are showing that the people who are interested are still interested, but the people who don't understand what calories are and how they affect the body may not be able to control their intake, and it's not going to make a difference in their weight control. So I think we need to understand that a calorie is actually a unit of energy. So we're taking in energy when we take in calories, and our body needs energy to function. Our hearts need energy to beat. We need, you know, to pump blood. We need energy for our brains to function. We need calories. The problem is that we don't understand what a portion is and how calories translate, and how if we're not expending calories through voluntary movement or exercise, we're not in balance. So I think it goes to showing individuals what a calorie is. And Carol, to your point about a Big Mac, I don't think that that's the biggest problem. A Big Mac is kind of easy to address. If someone's eating a lot of fast food, we can educate and find alternatives. Problem with calories for a big part of the population is eating 100 extra calories here or 200 extra calories here or 50 extra calories here and not understanding that that adds up as well.
And do we also take into consideration the hidden calorie?
Yes, and that's something that people don't understand, that if you're eating, the best example of the hidden calorie is somebody's like, I had a really healthy lunch. I made a salad, and we really break down what's in the salad other than some delicious and nutritious vegetables. If there's 15 kinds of cheeses in there and a bottle of salad dressing, and even though we suggest nuts to have some healthy, you know, unsaturated fat, if you have a half a pound of them, then those are calories that are not only hidden, they're actually visible, but we really don't realize what those extra calories, that extra unit of energy that we're not burning off, is doing to our weight management.
Absolutely. And Sean, just give me one second here, because I want to make one other point with Susan. That energy measurement, which is that you just so eloquently described as a calorie, is something that most people don't really get. That what does it? Do you know the? Can you reiterate the formula for burning the calorie? What it takes to burn a calorie?
Well, it's really I don't know if people really relate so much to what the actual formula is, but if you look at what a calorie is, and I don't think it's important to get into what a calorie is versus a kilocalorie, but it's really seeing what a unit of energy is to heat up a gram of water by a certain temperature. So it's
right.
The amount of energy required to raise a gram of water by 1 degree Celsius. It's you know that.
Right,
I
bring that up only because it is complicated. And what most people don't understand when they're looking at calories or they're counting calories is that it really takes a physiological function to burn those calories. And
mm-hmm.
So that's why I ask you to just kind of mention it and bring it up so that it kind of plays a role, so that people really understand that the word calorie is not bad. It actually describes a natural physiological function, and that's all I'm really trying to go for here. But Sean, Susan, you know, Susan made some great points as it relates to hidden calories and people not really understanding what thing. And what do you find with the psychological component of that when they're told or they're not told or they're unsure? And you know, where do they come as it relates to, you know, because I'm sure there have to be feelings about, well, you know, I eat this and I try really hard and it doesn't work and it's not helping. I eat salad every day I'm not getting the results that I need. And you know, do you find that? I'm sure you find that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of all or nothing thinking, and that tends to be the issue, is that You know, many of my clients come in feeling as though they'd love to stop counting calories, but they don't know how, and it's a loss of control for them instead of understanding the calories. It's a consistent obsession of counting the calories for that control. You know, usually when I begin with the people I work with, it's too intuitive and mindful eating, helping them wean off of the counting, but using the numbers to help them assess and understand their appetite. You know, with the calorie counting, it becomes more useful for them, and it helps them become more mindfully aware of getting in touch with the needs of their body, paying attention more to hunger from the stomach as opposed to hunger from the mind and the brain, and using the wisdom of your body to tell you how much or how little you should be eating. And we really focus on being present and mindful with that and understanding calories as opposed to looking at it so much as an obsession of number.
So you look at it from the terms of food as opposed to the calorie and whether or not it's the psychology of eating as opposed to the psychology of counting. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, it's the psychology of not making it such a factor of control in your life that if you are aware of the calories, as, you know, Susan had said, if you're with the places that are going to be showing you the calories, you're becoming more aware of what's in front of you and what you're eating, and you can also be more mindful to intuitively know when to eat and stop eating, especially if the calorie content is present in front of you. And it's really paying attention to what comes up for you with food as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if with fast food and all those places and how many there are, you know, people struggle with, okay, so what do I get from this menu?
Absolutely. It's fascinating. I want to take a minute here to reiterate for people who just gone. We are talking about, this is the Whole Scoop Radio. We're talking about diet and weight loss, and we're talking with Susan Weiner, registered licensed dietitian, and Sean Johnson, who is a mental health counselor. And we're just kind of discussing the good approaches to accomplishing goals tonight. So thank you for joining us. And the call number is 347-855-8894. To that point, Sean, I'm sure then if you're looking at it from the perspective of mindful eating, and what do you do with the emotions attached, and what do you do with the anxiety that's attached to mindful eating? I mean, at this point, I'm assuming, and you need to, you know, please correct me if this isn't accurate, but when someone is attempting to control their weight, there are, I know from working that there are many, many, many emotions, and there's much anxiety involved with that, just because everybody wants to be successful immediately. And Susan, I know that you've as well. And you know, I'm trying to get tonight to coming away with the right approaches. So, practice makes progress is fabulous. The psychology of mindful eating and not having the food have control of you, those are wonderful points. But what do we do with the emotions that are attached?
Well, you know, it depends on so many different emotions, and it's discussing what emotions come up with that, whether it's, like I had mentioned before, the control or lack of control. That's all very common when it comes to the emotions. And recognizing that if you create small realistic goals, it's not as scary. Fear comes into play a lot. Fear of the unknown, change, you know, behaviors that are hard to adapt to when you never learn the tools of how to adapt to them. So it's helping that, you know, people perceive it as realistic as opposed to looking so far in the future of, well, this is my weight, and this is my goal and this is where I want to be in such an amount of time. It's day by day and working on what comes up for you when something is too scary for you to try to let go of. Then we say, okay, so let's make this a smaller goal for you and find comfort in understanding that, you know, it's okay to have all of these interpersonal, psychological, physiological factors come to play because it helps you overcome those factors to have a better relationship and a healthier relationship with food.
So you should be nice to yourself and not beat yourself up. And
right. We focus on a lot of positives, you know, definitely positive thinking, letting go of your inner critical voice, and yes.
Susan, you know, she said something really helpful in that focusing on realistic goals. And I know that as a practitioner, if you are practicing with practice makers, then you have to be focusing on realistic goals. And how do you deal with that with your clients? I know that everybody's different, but if you were to sum it up, say, for anybody to just kind of take away, what kinds of advice would you give?
I love what Sean said, and to bounce off that, while people are figuring out some of their emotional goals and working towards mindfulness, I go for the practical. In all cases, I go for the practical. So I will work with my patients and clients to help them figure out how to get in touch with their body very realistically. So sometimes we're not really hungry. We are thirsty because we're simply not drinking enough water, or we are tired. So how many people overeat when they're tired or thirsty? When you're hungry, you should eat. When you're thirsty, or when you need fluid, because we're not always thirsty when we need fluid, you need to drink. And when you're tired, you may need to sleep. So it's a matter of figuring out what is really going on. And as Sean said, getting in touch with your body and getting in touch with your emotions, because figuring out what's really going on can help a person who is struggling with weight management or any other eating issue tackle those issues head on and resolve other issues. We also know that sleep or lack of sleep is tied with obesity levels and with prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. So I really focus on that. You may just be speaking to a patient who is overeating, and when you really get into it, you find out that they are showing a lot of symptoms of, for example, sleep apnea, which comes along with a lot of chronic conditions. And if they can go for a sleep study and get control of sleep apnea, a lot of times that can help them towards their goal and their progress in the weight control arena. So there are a lot of different things that should be addressed looking at a patient or client as an individual and finding out what's going on with them. And I'm sure that Sean deals with this a lot in her practice. It's all about listening to your patient. There's not one formula. It's about listening and motivational interviewing and finding out about what's really going on.
Well, you know, I don't even know where to begin with that. It's just such wonderful advice all the way around. And, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking about the person that eats late at night. And you made a great point. You know, are you really just tired and you're eating? Or, you know, what's really happening there? And, you know, I'm sure there are so many different reasons for people eating late at night. And so I'm sure that you've explored this in detail because this is such a common issue. I'm sure the reasoning runs gamut from being alone or feeling alone or just being tired and wanting to stay awake or like you can't sleep or not being able to sleep. Am I on track?
I mean, to chime in with that, I absolutely, you know, it's where they are with, you know, exhaustion or, you know, strictly it could be boredom. And a lot of times even late night food kind of serves a purpose for them to detach or to go to food for comfort. You know, developing in their mindset these techniques with food that help them deal with difficult situations. And we really focus on, okay, what type of healthy techniques can you now exchange with going to food as love and comfort, where you could be doing something that is beneficial for your health and your mind. And late night is definitely a trigger for many people. And so it's identifying what they're doing at that time. You know, is it watching TV or is it, and figuring out where they are and understanding why they might be going to food at that time and really focusing in on that.
So if you were to sum it up, somebody just from those, from that perspective, I know that if I've heard it once, I've heard it maybe, oh God, I don't know, 100-some-odd times. I eat at night. I get bored at night because, you know, I can't sleep. I eat at night because, or if you were to sum up those approaches, both of you, this is a question to both of you, What are like, say, 3 points that you would automatically, I'm sure that probably you could roll these off the tongues, what would you say, what would you tell somebody if they were just trying to take that component and change their lifestyle?
I go to practicality and behavior first, because people who are therapists and the great job that Shawn is doing with her patients, sometimes patient needs more support than I can give them in my office. So I go to the practicality of nutrition. And one thing that works a lot of times is we come up with a designated eating place in the home. So when I find out that one of my patients is eating late at night in their bed, for example, or in a bathroom or a closet if they're ashamed if there are other people in the home, we talk about eating in a designated eating place such as the kitchen table or the dining room area or a dinette in an apartment, whatever it is. So a designated eating place would not be the bed, would not be the closet, would not be the bathroom, would not be the car. It's kind of a light bulb moment. And then we talk about every time that they eat in the evening, if they decide to make that decision to eat, and that's okay, then I have them put out a placemat and utensils and really set a place for themselves to actually eat so that they're owning it, but owning it not in a negative way, in a positive way. When you eat at night, often in your bed or in secret, you're shoving the food down your throat and numbing your feelings and not even enjoying it. If you eat in a designated eating area in the home, if night eating is your issue, then you can tend to enjoy your food more, have a smaller portion, and really not feel guilty about it.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. Shawn, do you have anything to add to that? What are the three things that you would...
Well, you know, to really agree with Susan on everything about having a place to dine in peace. We do a mindful eating. You know, we do a session with our clients where they bring their own food and we'll sit outside, and it is a peaceful environment and really paying attention to what you're eating and appreciating it, as you had said, and, you know, looking at it and the power of your mind, and it helps your brain register when you're full. It allows you to enjoy food more and really see food from a different perspective. It's a healthy relationship with food. And so a lot of times people, when they go late at night to just go eat, they aren't even aware themselves that they're doing it and they're not staying present. So it's helping them recover from, you know, telling them, well, don't miss this experience. And a lot of times when you check in with yourself, and you want to go to, you know, let's say if it's a sugar craving and they want to go to the cookies, it's all about how you're eating and where you're eating. Mm-hmm. Are you standing in the kitchen? And if you're sitting and actively having to put the food down in front of you, you know, that process is now you're mindful. And it might not be something you go to right away if you practice that behavior.
Wow. You know, there's so many things to talk about when it comes to successful weight management. And I think we've just kind of scratched the surface with some of these. How do you get the information out there to people? Like, for instance, and I just kind of threw out because I always use people, have either of you found a food policeman there? Because when I'm hearing things like, oh, no, don't eat that, that's bad for you, or, oh, that's not a good food, and, you know, especially the don't eat that bowl of cereal because that's really bad, but that cereal's okay. You know, where do we get that, and how do we help people decide or make an informed decision? Because this show is all about an informed decision and being able to make an informed decision. Why we have people of your caliber on, guests of your caliber, to kind of find some of these things, so that people can go away from this show and say, all right, you know what? I am going to think about where I eat and think about my again and why I might be eating it. Or, you know, maybe that isn't such a bad food, but maybe I need to think about how much of it that I'm eating. So perhaps, you know, we might explore a little bit, because I just feel like people just think that they look at one food and they say it's bad because 10 people told them it was, and then another 10 people the same food and say, oh, no, that was. So how do we help them with that? Susan.
No foods are good and no foods are bad. It leads to judgment of your personal self. And I come from a place, probably one of the reasons that I identify so well with most of my patient population is I am someone who has battled my weight my entire life. And in order to keep my weight under good control, which I do have my weight under good control, it takes a lot of practical work and a lot of very honest and very realistic work. So when a patient comes in to me for the first time, they actually fill out an assessment form before they come in and bring it with them. On their visit, they've been on other programs for sure before they've seen me in many circumstances. And when they come and they say, this is what I want to weigh and this is how much I want to lose and I need to lose this much by Christmas and whatever, and they shake the assessment form and say, nowhere on here does it say a weight goal. And I make them smile and say, and I'm not even going to pull out a metropolitan height weight chart from 1959 and circle where you weighed in eighth grade, you know. So we make a little bit of a, you know, we make a little joke out of it at first. But I think it's important, Carol, to all the points that you just made, to go back to the person's history of their weight and what their weight issues are. And make your goal almost anything other than the scale, depending on how overweight the person is. A goal might be to tie their shoes or be able to walk up a flight of stairs without huffing and puffing, or be able to button their coat here in New York where it's freezing, you know, much more easily. So we come up with goals, actually, other than weight goals. That tends to relieve some of the obsessiveness and some of the frustration if the scale does not move at the rate that people expect. Because I've never, in 27 years of practice, had a patient come in and say, at the beginning when I'm meeting with them, it's okay if I don't lose weight for the first few weeks. That's all right. I know eventually I'll get to my goal. I've never had anybody say that. So we come up with other things the same way that it's important to come up with motivations other than food. They can't be rewarded with food. They can be rewarded with non-food rewards, but motivation with terms of being able to do things and being motivated and rewarded with things other than food are all great ideas.
And to that point, Susan, are other people influential? You know, are the significant others influential in the success or the not so successful, or and how do you deal with that, both you actually?
Oh, absolutely. And just coming off, it's still only January, just coming off the holidays, my patients who are extremely successful during holiday gatherings, for example, if they made a decision, and again, a mindful decision to eat something that they would not ordinarily eat, they were jumped on by family, friends, and, you know, who normally were supportive, you know, policing them. So it's extremely important to support people who are in trying to gain control of their health and weight loss, but that's not always the case. So that has to be handled on an individual basis. Of course, if people are supportive of you and understanding what you're going through, and if you're eating in a home where the other people in the home are eating completely out of control or very unhealthy, it becomes much more difficult to stay on track.
And Sean, I'm sure that you deal with that a lot.
Yes, and, you know, absolutely when it comes to working with, you know, our clients and saying, relieving the stress of the scale and, like, what was mentioned about, you know, the weight. It's amazing when that component is removed and that you have the control to take control of your life with this, and it doesn't have to be based around a number, because so often people make the errors of being so desperate to want to lose weight just to see what's on the scale that they adopt nutrition and exercise that produce temporary weight loss, and then there's that failure. And so then it's dealing with the emotion of that failure. So it's really the support is so important. Planning for yourself and, you know, really figuring out techniques that help you deal with emotions when it comes to food and identifying them, writing them down, coping skills for that. Engaging in, you know, any type of activities and recognizing the triggers and cravings that come up and knowing situations or certain people and knowing who can support you and absolutely who is in the home with you and, you know, making them aware that the importance for the continual growth for you and that it's okay to have setbacks and the fear of failure doesn't have to exist if you take away so much of this obsession of the numbers on the scale.
Wow. So, I mean, wow, talk about those dynamics. I'm blown away at this point because, you know, I too have worked with a number of people, and there are just so many dynamics, which leads me to my next point. It's like, okay, well, first of all, I got a couple of points. First of all, then I might stand corrected. There may, in fact, be food police, and they may be our own family members. So is the point then to make sure that we surround ourselves by people who are going to enhance our success as opposed to hinder? Would you both agree with that?
I would, but we can't choose our parents, and we can't always choose our family members, you know. But but I practice with my patients. If they're going on a vacation or they're even having problems at family dinners or even daily coworkers saying something, whatever the circumstance, we discuss it and we come up with alternatives that they or we come up with things that they can say. And one of the things that we talk about is if somebody says, should you be having that or can you eat that on your diet, which is ridiculous, we all know, but if that is said, they'll say, I can eat whatever I would like to eat. I choose not to eat that now, or I choose to eat that now. And usually
so you're giving them power. Is that what you're doing? You're teaching them how to take their own power. And Sean, I'm sure you focus on taking back personal power and making decisions that are good for you as opposed to good for everyone else or what everyone else thinks is a good decision. Is that right?
Oh, 100%. We really focus boundaries with yourself, boundaries with friends and family, and, you know, like what was said about you can't choose your family, but you can choose to react and engage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really giving them the power of you can do this. You have control of your life. Nobody else controls your life, and you can't control others. And the only control you have is your own. So being mindful of the choices and decisions you make, having compassion for yourself, you know, knowing that you have the direction to center yourself to get there, and you have the strength. And, you know, people are going to say and think and believe what they say, think and believe, and letting go of the need to please and to please yourself is all about maintaining your weight and having that self-satisfaction.
That's very cool. Let me just do some logistics here. I want to make sure that everybody knows, because we've picked up a couple of new callers and we're going to take some questions here in a minute. You are listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio, and the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We also are taking questions on info.thewholescoop@gmail.com. Tonight we're talking about weight management, and we have Susan Weiner, who's a registered licensed dietitian who has an extensive background in weight management and is just an absolute expert in the field. And we have Sean Johnson, who is also an expert in this field in a different way. She's a health counselor who focuses on the psychology of eating. So we're talking right now about some of those things that we need to do to just take control of our own lives to be successful with our own weight management. So that being said, ladies, I'm going to ask you a question, and we're going to take a couple of questions. What about some of these other programs out there? I mean, you know, we're on the television right now, and if each of us turned on a different channel, we'd probably find a different diet program out there. And some of them buy the food, some of them you don't, some of them you pay for someone to come you over the internet and whatever. What is your experience with particular programs, and do they work for the types of things that we're talking about tonight, or are they just temporary fix to a more chronic issue? From what I'm hearing tonight, my guess is that it's more of a chronic issue. It's more of a compilation of different issues, and if you take control of where you are as a person, then perhaps you don't need someone else telling you that their approach is absolutely the best for you. Is that, do you find that as well, or am I off on that?
Oh, I think you're very spot on with what you just said, Carol, and it's extremely individualized, but it goes back to what I said in my first response a while back. Success is measured in keeping your weight down for the long run, not in the short run. So any of these programs, which of course are all in the news now because it is right after the new year, if you are compliant with, will work because you're restricting your calorie intake and they're suggesting that you increase your calorie expenditure. It's a matter of it, if it doesn't become the fabric of who you are, and if it doesn't work for you, you will gain back your weight that you lost and even more, which will make you even sadder, more depressed, and start the cycle over again. So it is very individual. Obviously, many of the programs some of the programs are better than others. If something looks too good to be true or makes huge promises for very quick, fast, and painless weight loss, it probably is not so.
Okay, great. And Sean, do you have anything to add to that?
You know, we really steer clear with our clients we work with of diet books and what you're seeing on the TV, because again, that brings up a lot of emotion, and it's, you know, again, back to support. You know, people will come and bring them a diet book as a gift, and not recognizing how much that affects the person internally, and that dieting alone is not going to work for long-term weight loss. You know, we say the most effective weight loss programs are that those that combine the way you eat, exercise, and psychological intervention, and really focusing in on those, and not so much of you have to do a certain diet from this book as much as what works for you. And it's each individual and how they can maintain a lifestyle that they're comfortable and that they're healthy.
And we also redefine what the word diet is. I think that that's important. I redefine to my patients that the word diet means Sean's intake of food is Sean's diet. Carol's intake of food is Carol's diet. We don't want to use the word diet to denote very restrictive, depriving lifestyle. That sets us up for negativity and usually not for success.
Absolutely.
And you know what? That's interesting, Susan, because I was just going to flip over to be a clinician for a minute and say, you know, the word diet really is a definition for how we eat, and it's not a definition of just weight loss. And everyone thinks that you're on a diet, that's an automatic weight loss. But you know what? The diet that I have is very restrictive because of a bunch of different reasons, none of which have anything to do with counting how much energy I'm taking in or expending. So, you know, it is something. I think that's absolutely a fabulous point. And so, thank you for that. Let's take a question. We've got a couple of callers that have been patiently waiting. Thank you so much for waiting. Hi, you're on the air. Do you have a question? Hello? Don't think we have 407 number. Okay. Let's try somebody else. Hello, you're on the air. Can you hear us? A 603 number? Okay, I have a feeling that people have us muted. So at this point, I'm going to see if any blogs came in for questions. But in the meantime, while I'm looking at that, I'm thinking that perhaps we could start to wind down a little bit in terms of maybe you guys have five tips that you might want to tell somebody about if you were to just kind of sum up some of the things we've talked about. Susan?
Sure, I'll start. Well, the first tip, just to repeat, because I think it's so important, know when you're hungry, know when you're thirsty or not well hydrated, and know when you're tired. So that's tip number one. Get to know your body and your needs a little bit so that you can fulfill those needs and not necessarily eat when you're thirsty or when you're asleep. Take care of what you need to take care of. My second very important tip is that I always say tomorrow, maybe not that tomorrow is too late, but why wait until tomorrow? If you did not have a great eating day up until this point tonight, so what? Life is about learning a lesson. You did what you did during the day. For the rest of the evening, have a really good evening, and you'll do a better job the next bite that you put into your mouth. So don't beat yourself up. Just move on. Definitely do not starve yourself. Starving yourself or just over-restricting usually leads to binging. And I would absolutely make veggies your friend. When you come home after a long day of work or school or errands or appointments, if you don't have some delicious raw veggies available to snack on, they're not going to cut and wash and clean and purchase themselves. Do you have a healthy snack ready for you in the refrigerator when you come home at the end of the day? That would be just a practical tip. And get support. I just decided on that one for the last one. Find some coworkers, friends, family, or a buddy that can be your support in this whole process. You don't have to do it alone. If it's not a healthcare provider, such as a registered dietitian or nutritionist who can help you, find a friend who you can talk to about this. So those are my best tips for tonight.
Fabulous. Thank you. Sean, what about you? You have five tips for someone?
I do. You know, what we really focus on is creating a structure for yourself. And when you're dealing with mealtimes, instead of approaching it with anxiety and fear that you're going to eat the wrong thing, rely on the plan that you've made for yourself and really focus in on, you know, how realistic it is for you and checking in with yourself throughout the day. That would be a second one, is really emotionally checking in. And even before each meal, noting or writing down where you are on a hunger scale and recognizing what type of hunger you're feeling and where it's coming from. Is it because it was in front of you, or is it because you felt your body was in need of food? Eating your food slow and mindfully, as we've spoken about before, even stopping in the middle, putting your fork down after each bite, helping you be more mindful. I don't even know
how many
I'm on at this point.
Do you ladies focus on chewing at all? Do you focus on tasting? I mean, do you find that most people in today's world, with us being so busy, do you find that most people just kind of eat and they don't really taste their food and they don't really, you know, do they really experience their food, or do they just eat to eat and not pay attention?
So that's a complicated question, because I don't focus overly on the counting chewing aspect, because that, again, leads to really restrictive behaviors and eventually overeating and binging. But I've done a number of groups, group kind of sessions, and one great mindful eating exercise I do that has to do with appreciation of food and chewing is I have everyone in the group take one almond. Nobody usually eats one almond, right? And we pass around one almond per person, and we touch the texture of the almond and feel the almond and put the almond in the palm of our hand. Then I have each person put one in their mouth and feel the texture in their mouth and then slowly chew it and really appreciate it. This goes on. I'm talking fast about it. But we do that so they can appreciate what it takes to chew one piece of food. And then we talk about if they've ever eaten a food the size of the almond and just stuck, you know, 15 pieces of that in their mouth at once and the appreciation value of it. I think that's a really fabulous, mindful exercise.
Yeah, that's great. That's absolutely great. Thank you for that. We do have a question. The question is, what about weight loss during menopause? Is it truly possible to lose weight and even understand body during a time when your body is so disrupted with hormonal changes?
Fabulous question. I just gave a talk on that recently. Hormone levels changing during menopause can make weight loss a big challenge, especially weight in the midsection or the belly fat, and also there's problems with insulin resistance and insulin insensitivity, which also affects weight loss. It is extremely important to continue, and if you haven't started, an exercise program. It is extremely important, I'll repeat that, for an exercise program. Of course, there may be some medical issues or some kind of limitations around that as well. But exercise for women going through menopause is very important for just so many reasons. It is possible that when you're going through menopause, and it is possible definitely to lose weight, you may require fewer calories than you were eating simply right before you were going through menopause, because things are starting to slow down and change. So you can lose weight, but it does require increased physical activity and, in some cases, spacing out your food during the day, absolutely planning your meals and your snacks, cutting down or alcohol out, and did I say exercising 15 times? Because that's very important, both weight-bearing and cardio.
Great answer. You know, the thing that you said, too, when you're talking about menopause and losing weight, one of the issues, one of the things you just said that I think we need to reiterate is that you started to touch on this earlier, the metropolitan scales from 1959. Well, we have a tendency to kind of look at those numbers and base everybody off of those. But you're absolutely, you make an excellent point when somebody's going to pause and they have to, you know, control their caloric intake a little bit more. You know, maybe as healthcare professionals, we kind of have to look at what we're out there outlining for people to be the so-called norm, as opposed to what is now normal when, you know, those norms change as the bodies change, as physiological functions change. So, you know, I think that you brought some excellent points. Sean, do you have anything as it relates to the menopause issue?
I definitely agree with the physical activity because of the menopause and the emotions that come with that. You know, we really promote yoga because you're able to have that mental and spiritual connection when you're having those emotions and that unusually come up at times. So it's knowing that, you know, physically, of course, that when you're working out and you're feeling good, that your endorphins are going to be coming, releasing endorphins, feel-good chemicals. However, spiritually, it'll help you increase your connection with your mind and a sense of oneness with yourself and being in touch with your emotions.
Great. Yeah, that's great. There's a follow-up question, though, and the question is there a scientific process within each person's DNA makeup that really require a more in-depth look at the person's ability to achieve weight loss? Maybe it's not all psychological. Do we find any validity to the physiological changes that may, in essence, be in the DNA? I think that's what they're asking. So that, you know, maybe it's not all psychological, or maybe it's not just one way. And that's an excellent question.
Yeah, that's what we started off, though, our discussion tonight. I think that my first response was there's a big piece in our genes. There's a big piece of our genetic makeup that can make some of us tend towards being more overweight, and some of us genetically tend towards being of normal weight or of underweight. That is 100% true. We just want to make sure that we don't always blame our genes for our genes not fitting. So you know, it's definitely a little bit of both, but genetic makeup absolutely will affect your weight.
And if you are experiencing issues with menopause and you think it may be a genetic makeup situation, are tests now available to determine that? And are approaches that can enhance those physiological functions again? And I think it's very important, as I said earlier, to see a healthcare practitioner, a registered licensed dietitian, or somebody that is well versed in those kinds of issues, and so you might want to check out nutrigenomics. I just kind of throw that out there, ladies. Sorry, that's something that is near to me. But I have to say that we are almost out of time. We have like maybe a minute or so left. I'm sorry to get to your question, but please feel free to give us. Send in your questions, and we'll be happy to answer them. I'm sure, ladies, if I forwarded over a couple of questions to you after this show, you'd be okay with giving us some kind of respite.
Sure.
Of course.
Oh, thanks. So it'll be info.thewholescoop@gmail.com is the best way to get your questions in if you have anything. And I apologize. Like I said, this is our inaugural broadcast, so I'm going to have to figure out how to identify the callers so that they know that we're actually asking them. So thank you so much, ladies. It's been fabulous, just absolutely fabulous. I could have you back. And we can talk about this whole thing again and not even, I mean, there's just so much to talk about, so many things to talk about. Thank you. For everyone else, remember that we have an up next show January 29th, and we will be talking about back surgery. And it's called Back Surgery, Get Used to Wheelchair. Dr. Basilio Pace is a chiropractor from New Jersey who will discuss conservative approaches to back issues and when it may or may not be right surgery. So that's up and coming in the next couple of weeks, and we love having you back. And if you have any ideas or suggestions on where you'd like to see the Whole Scoop explore and what kinds of programs you'd like to see, email us at info.thewholescoop@gmail.com and your feedback. We're really looking forward to it. Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. Sean, thank you.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.